Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. This is Peter Schiff with another live edition of Wall Street Unspun, the midweek market update. This is Wednesday, July 16th, 2008, and I'm doing this show live Wednesday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. We do the show on my website at www.europac.net and also on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz. The number to call toll-free, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Before we start the show, just a quick rundown. I just got back from the Freedom Fest. I did the show last week live from Freedom Fest. I think we had about 1,400 people there, which was about, 50% more than were there the year prior. And the event is getting bigger and bigger and more popular. A lot of good speakers. So if you weren't there this year, potentially plan to attend next year. If anybody happened to be at Freedom Fest, if they want to call up, they want to talk about their experience, feel free. 888-678-9597. A couple of updates on television appearances that I know about. I will be on Fox News, Bulls and Bears, this Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time. Also, I'm going to be on CBS Sunday morning, this Sunday morning. I am not sure about the time that it's on. You might want to check your local listings, but the name of the show is Sunday Morning. I think it's with Brian Osgood, I think is his name. So check your listings for Sunday morning, but I will be on this Sunday sometime in the morning. John Brown was on television today on the Maria Bartiromo. I did a pretty good job there. I also was on Fox Business. A lot of the times that I'm on television, I don't really know about it in advance. They end up, and a lot of times, like, I think I'm going to do television, they end up canceling. I actually had booked CNBC Europe, and CNBC basically put the kibosh on it. Apparently, I'm back to persona non grata, even though I was on CNBC that one time on Squawk Box, and I had a good time there, and they seemed to like have me on. I somehow slipped through the cracks, because the producers are once again not allowing me on the network. So we'll see if that can change. But for now, I can go on CBS and I can go on Fox and CNN and PBS, but I just can't go on CNBC. But we'll see. We're constantly working to try to get on more and more shows. But anyway, at least this is going to be an interesting thing to be on this CBS Sunday morning. Who knows, maybe it could be a stepping stone to 60 Minutes. You never know. Anyway, a lot of stuff going on this week. Of course, the biggest thing happening is the bailout of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which is now official, basically. And my prediction, and I predicted it even before I wrote Crash Proof, but I wrote in two places in Crash Proof that I thought that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac would go under. And in fact, that is what would have been happening if the federal government was not bailing them out. And, the interesting thing is that Henry Paulson is asking Congress to give him a blank check to commit unlimited amounts of money to Fannie and Freddie. Unbelievable. A blank check. He doesn't even want to limit it to $50 billion, $100 billion, $200 billion. He wants it to be unlimited. And according to Secretary Treasury, that's the only way to make sure that the taxpayers don't actually have to spend any money. This is the nonsense that he expects us to buy. He's asking Congress to give him a blank check because he says with a blank check, I'll never have to write it. His analogy is if you have a water pistol in your pocket, you might have to pull it out. But if you got a bazooka in your pocket, you're never going to have to pull it out. So he thinks that if Wall Street knows that he's got unlimited amount of money that he can flush down this toilet, that somehow this is going to save the day. I mean, this is absolute, utter nonsense. And the reason is the money that the Secretary of the Treasury is willing to pour into this rat hole doesn't do anything to solve the underlying problem of all the bad mortgages that they insure and the bad mortgages that they own and the losses that Fannie and Freddie are going to have. All the blank check does is ensure that Fannie and Freddie don't go bankrupt because people will be willing to lend the money knowing that the government stands behind the debt. So all this bazooka does is enable Fannie and Freddie to stay in business. But the longer they stay in business, the more money they're going to lose because the bazooka doesn't do anything about all these bad mortgages. And, you know, unfortunately, the last thing we want to do is keep Fannie and Freddie Mac in business. Right now, they are insuring 80% of the mortgages that are issued. That's a lot of mortgages that are going to go bad because home prices are still inflated. People are still using ARMs. So all these mortgages are going to, are going to go bad, or a good chunk of them. And so this whole analogy doesn't make any sense. The taxpayer is going to lose a fortune because they're going to have to pull the bazooka out of their pocket because they're going to have to make good on Freddie and Fannie's losses. That's the bottom line. If Freddie and Fannie don't have the capital to absorb the losses, basically what Paulson is saying is the government will absorb the losses. So if Fannie and Freddie's creditors believe that, then yes, there will not be a run on their bonds. People will continue to stay in their stock. So that's all well and good for the shareholders and the bondholders, but it's lousy for the American taxpayer or the American wage earner or saver because the losses are still going to be there in their portfolio. See, the problem isn't with the money they're borrowing. The problem is with the money they're lending because they're not going to get it back. So this is an asinine proposal. If Congress signs on to this blank check, I mean, this is a huge disaster because the losses are going to be not in the hundreds of billions, but probably in excess of $1 trillion. This is a bottomless pit. It's a money pit. And these guys ought to be thrown out on their butts if they give Paulson a blank check. And what is Paulson's track record anyway? This guy has not gotten anything right. He's the guy that told us that the subprime problems were contained, that the economy was fine, everything was great. Now all of a sudden, Freddie and Fannie are going broke, when not too long ago, he was assuring us how solvent they are. Now he's saying that they're broke. I want your authority to infuse unlimited amounts of money into these companies, but I don't even think we're ever going to use it. I mean, this is insane, absolutely insane. But you know what? He's probably going to get it. That's how nuts the whole thing is. That's how crazy the situation is. But the one thing that's assured is that when Paulson's got that bazooka in his pocket, he's going to pull it out and he's going to obliterate the dollar. That's what he's going to shoot. And there was a Senate testimony today with Ben Bernanke in front of the House, and Ron Paul got to ask some questions. And I recommend probably going to YouTube and seeing the clips of what Ron Paul had to say. But, he was talking about inflation. And, of course, Ben Bernanke tried, he's blaming inflation and the Fed for rising oil prices, which is true. And he tries to talk his way out of it by saying, look, the Federal Reserve can't produce any oil. It's not our fault that the price of oil is going up. But that's nonsense. We know they can't produce oil, but they produce money. They produce dollars. They print a bunch of them. And if they print a lot of money, then the value of money goes down. And if the value of money goes down, we need more money to buy oil. So he tried to finesse his way out of it by claiming that we can't pump oil. We know the Fed can't pump oil, but they print money. That's the problem. And the more money they print, the more money we need to buy oil. I wish Ron Paul would have pressed that point. That's always the problem I have with Ron. He says a lot of great stuff, but he always lets Greenspan and then Bernanke off the hook because he lets them, you know, ignore his real questions and say they're nonsense, and he doesn't really hold their feet to the fire and challenge them to really address the points and answer the questions in a meaningful way. But it's still very interesting to watch. And, of course, you know, I was watching it on CNBC, and they cut in front of Ron Paul, and they started talking about some nonsense while Ron Paul was speaking. I flipped over to Fox Business, and they weren't interrupting it, so I was able to watch that. But I wonder if it was coincidence or just by accident that they decided to preempt Ron Paul, who, of course, is the most important speaker in the House because he's the only one that really understands what's going on. Anyway, I know I've got some people lining up, so let me take some of the calls. First one is Mary from California. Go ahead, Mary.
Oh, hey, Peter. How you doing? First, I have a question for you, and then I have a comment. First, my question is there a U.S. bank that you feel safe enough to deposit your paycheck into? Because I'm really starting to wonder.
Well, I'm not, you know, I'm not confident about the paycheck. You know, here the problem is, you put your money in a bank and you wonder, is my money safe? Well, you know, your money's not safe no matter where you put it, if it's in the dollar, because the dollar's not safe.
I agree.
Beyond that.
But I mean, I have to have, I don't keep one dime more in my bank account than I need to pay my bills or invest. But I need a U.S. bank account to serve as a function to pay my bills. I mean, I mean,
there definitely is a chance that banks are going to go under. A lot of banks will go under. Of course, they have the FDIC insurance for all that's worth.
Yeah, which will run out after about 10 banks going under.
I would certainly, you know, try to avoid a lot of the banks in your area that are heavily into the mortgage lending, subprime lending, home equity loans. You can probably find that out pretty easily. And not that, you know, if you have less than $100,000, you're still covered by the FDIC to get your dollars back, you know, whatever they're going to be worth. But if you have a small amount of money, it probably doesn't matter. But the thing is, it's the inconvenience. You don't necessarily want to be the bank that fails. I'm sure even if you get your money back, there'll be inconvenience. So try to stay in the banks that you can at least try to figure out, have, you know, smaller exposure to that sector. But of course, by all means, do not keep more than the insured amounts in any one bank.
Oh, no. I don't keep more than, like, $6,000 at one time, and that's just to pay my bills. Like I said, I'm a client of yours. I read your book. I really believe in Austrian economics, and, I bank it. Can I say the bank? Because I don't know, do you get in trouble if I say what bank? I mean, I bank at a bank that just...
A lot of the banks are in trouble. Probably the majority of the banks are in trouble. And if it wasn't for the actions already being pursued by the Fed, a lot of these banks would already be bankrupt.
But so then where do you put your money? I mean, you know, if Gerard Cassidy and his clan say that 150 to 300 banks are in serious trouble, where do you put your money? I mean, banking is a necessary function. Where do you put your money?
We're putting our money in precious metals, in foreign currencies, in foreign stocks, in foreign bonds. We're trying to get out of the U.S. dollar, you know, as quickly as we can.
No. I mean, like I said, I agree. But if you live in the U.S. and, you know, you have to have a bank account that functions.
Just don't leave too much money there. If you leave $5,000 or $6,000 in there, even if the bank fails, you've got the FDIC protection. So you're going to get your money back. The question is, what's it going to be worth when you get it back? I don't know. But you're not leaving a significant amount of money there anyway.
I know, but I don't want to lose any of it.
You got to keep money somewhere that you're planning on using to buy groceries and everyday things. And if you can decide, you know, their interest rates are so low now that if you're really worried about it, you can keep some cash in your house because on a passbook checking account, you can't really get much of a yield nowadays anyway.
Well, I guess that's, I have silver coins, but, you know, I guess you're right. I guess I should just keep a certain amount of cash in my house in case something does happen and I need to pay for some cash.
Another thing that I recommend is rather than keeping a lot of cash, if you have a house and you have extra storage, don't keep the cash. Buy the things that you would buy with that cash, but buy it now. Just go to these big, you know, Costco's and, you know, these big stores and buy in bulk and store the stuff. because I'd rather store stuff than dollars, because you're going to ultimately use the dollars to buy stuff, and the stuff's just going to get more expensive.
Oh, yeah, I do that, too.
The stuff.
Yeah, I do that, too.
Basically, bailout of Freddie and Fannie, we're going to kick inflation into a whole new gear. We're likely to go, right now, the government came out with the CPI today, and it showed, you know, year-over-year inflation at 5%, which is the highest rate in over 10 years. The actual inflation rate is probably somewhere between 10 and 12%. By this time next year, the annual inflation rate is probably going to be over 20% a year. I don't know what the CPI is going to read. Right? It's not going to read 20%, but the actual rate of inflation is going to be 20%. So if the cost of living is rising by 20% a year, if the cost of cornflakes and, you know, whatever you're buying is going up by 20% a year, if you've got an extra $1,000, why hold on? Well, just buy that stuff now.
Oh, I know. I buy clothes for my daughter who's growing. I buy bigger sizes for her because whenever I can get them on sale. Because I know eventually she's going to be that size and going to need those clothes or going to need those shoes. So I do that for her. But I also like to make a comment. The whole thing about CNBC, I wouldn't worry too much about them. It's getting so frustrating watching them. I had to turn them off 3 times today. One time in particular, this is how much they just don't get it. They had a segment on street signs where they showed 2 lines. On the left side was the line for IndyMac, and on the right side was on the line for people to get the new iPhone. And their question is, which one's the real economy, one or the other? And I was so frustrated because it's like, no, you don't get it. They're both the same economy. The left side shows savers being penalized, and the right side shows people who use other people's savings via their credit card to get a new toy. It's like the spenders are rewarded and the savers are penalized. It's the same economy, just looked at it from 2 different perspectives.
And there was an interesting, you know, I should put this up on my website. It was funny. I mean, there's a good story up on today, but there was an article that someone sent me that was in The Onion, which I thought was absolutely hysterical about our economy. And I might try to get that article up on my website. Because it's not a real news story.
I know. I mean, it's funny. I know. Yeah.
Understand? I mean, I was literally cracking up, laughing as I was reading this article. Maybe I should try to get it up on the website maybe by tomorrow, so you people that are listening can go read that. But the guy that wrote it totally understands the economy much more so than the people who work at financial publications like the Wall Street Journal, or that work at CNBC. And this is a parody paper.
Oh yeah, I know. It's hilarious.
To get on TV where people can see me, but this thing on the CBS on Sunday, that'll be good. I mean, it's network news; it's a much bigger audience than any of these cable shows that I do.
Well, I'll definitely watch it, and I'm really going to try hard to go to the San Francisco Money Show because it's in my area. So hopefully, I'll see you there. I don't know if you're going to do a client only thing, but that would be cool.
All right, we'll see you there.
Thank you. All right, bye bye.
The other book, the little book, is now finished. And I believe it's available to be bought now. You can order it on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble. It's going to be released October 10th or October 13th. So what is it? We got the rest of July, August, and September. So 3 months from now, the new book is going to be out. So, you know, you can already reserve your copy on either Barnes & Noble or Amazon. They don't actually have the picture of the book yet. But that should be up there shortly because I've seen the cover art. They're actually going to print it up once they get. We're trying to line up right now. We've almost finished all the various people who are going to, you know, blurb the book on the back cover. You know, on the back cover of the books, you generally have people that say what a great book it is. So we're getting all that done, and then they'll be able to print the covers. Then I guess they'll transmit the artwork to the online sites, and you'll be able to actually see the cover. But that book is coming. It's almost ready. I mean, the whole book is written. It's done. And it's just a question of typesetting it, getting it out, and getting it on the shelves. Anyway, the next caller is Walter from Minnesota.
Peter, I was wondering, is it only the hedge funds that are allowed to short the market, or can firms like yours do that too?
Well, anybody can short the market.
I was just thinking, like,
right now, what's going on right now with short sellers is, of course, the government is trying to vilify the short sellers and blame the short sellers for the market going down, just like they want to blame the speculators for the price of oil going up. So the government looks at oil prices going up and they want to say, well, this is because of speculators, and they see stock market going down. Well, this is because of I mean, they want to blame speculators as if there's nothing actually going on here. But one of the things they're talking about is this idea of naked short selling, which theoretically is not even legal, but they're trying to crack down on it. And what naked short selling is when you sell a stock short without first borrowing the shares. So you, in order to short a stock, you have to borrow it from somebody who owns it so that when you sell it, because when you're shorting a stock, you're selling it, you have to be able to deliver the security to the buyer. Because when you sell stock, somebody has to buy the stock. Well, if you're selling a stock that you don't own, you're selling it short, how do you deliver the stock to the person who actually bought it? Well, the way you do that is you borrow it from somebody who has loaned you their shares. And now I can take those borrowed shares and deliver them to the person who bought what I sold. Well, in many cases, what's happening on Wall Street is people are shorting stocks they didn't borrow, and they're not making good delivery. And the regulators are not picking up on it. And they should be. I mean, you shouldn't be able to sell a stock short that you haven't borrowed. And they should enforce that. But, I mean, naked short selling is not why we're in a bear market. But, of course, the government is trying to pretend that that's the case. They should crack down on naked short selling because you shouldn't be able to sell a stock that you don't have to deliver.
If we're in a bear market now, it seems to me like most stocks are kind of trending down. Isn't it safer almost to be shorting stocks than to be buying them?
Well, in the short run, I would agree with you, right? In the short run, stocks are going down. Even the stocks that we're buying for our clients have been going down. But I made the argument in my book, Crash Proof, and I still think it makes sense. If ultimately it's the dollar that's going to collapse, not stocks, and when you're shorting stocks, what you're doing is you're selling an asset and accumulating U.S. dollars. If the dollar collapses, short selling is going to backfire because even though real stock prices will be falling, nominal stock prices could be going into the stratosphere, and that's what hurts the short seller. So if you understand how the game is going to end up, if you understand how it's going to look at the end, and that's the only way I invest. I'm not trying to encourage my clients to invest for a day, a week, a month, or a year. I'm confident I know how the whole situation is going to end up. And so I know I can deal my clients a winning hand. I don't know that it's going to be ahead at every step of the way, but I know in the end, if you hold the hand, it's a winner. And so that's what I'm playing for. And I think in the end, what's going to happen is a huge markdown of U.S. assets relative to foreign assets as we ultimately get put in a penalty box. We have to pay the piper for years of extravagance and excess consumption and undersaving and underinvesting in infrastructure and in plant and equipment, that our assets are going to be lower and our citizens are going to be poorer relative to other people given the current dynamic. It doesn't mean that Americans, it doesn't mean Americans are going to be poorer than the Mexicans. Right, we might still be wealthier, but the gap between us and them is going to narrow considerably, meaning our assets are going to lose value relative to other assets. Therefore, we need to own these other assets. And the dollar is going to lose a lot of value relative to other currencies. And I'm also confident that there's going to be a lot of inflation, not only in the United States, but around the world, which means we want to concentrate our wealth not in paper, but in real stuff. That's why I'm buying a lot of these foreign stocks. Even though the price of many of the stocks that we're buying is going down right now, in the final analysis, I expect the price to be way up, and that's what we're investing for. We're investing to win the game when it's over. Right? We're not trying to be ahead every step of the way because it doesn't matter who's ahead. You know, you play a baseball game, it doesn't matter who's winning the first inning or the second inning. Now, obviously, if you go behind, you know, if you give up 50 runs in the first inning, yeah, that matters. You're never going to win. Right, but I mean, as long as you're keeping it close, what matters is who's ahead at the end.
Do you think it's unlikely that stocks in general will be lower 2 years from today than they are currently?
I think U.S. stocks, there's a good chance they'll be lower. But even if they're not lower in nominal terms, they will be lower in terms of gold bullion or in terms of other currencies. But I think that the foreign stocks that we're buying are much more likely to actually be higher in price in 2 years than lower in price, which is why we're buying them. I think they'll continue to pay dividends, and they'll ultimately be higher. And, of course, you know, I'm talking about in terms of their local currencies. In terms of the U.S. dollar, they could be substantially higher.
When I saw Wells Fargo up 30% today, I almost was thinking, you know, that might be an opportunity to do some sort of a short position on it.
Yeah, remember, Wells Fargo was up 32% today, but, you know, it was down, you know, sharply. You know, so basically all Wells Fargo is back up to where it was. I'll tell you how many days ago. It's basically Wells Fargo is back to where it was about 2 weeks ago. But, you know, I mean, if you look at where Wells Fargo started falling, Wells Fargo was at $38 back in November of 07, so less than a year ago. And all even though it was at 30, it's only rallied to 27. You know, it was at 21. Now, yeah, they reported better than expected earnings, and they increased their dividend. And that really caught the shorts off guard, and the stock moved up. And I think it caused a lot of short covering and a lot of financials. And, yeah, I think wherever this rally peters out, for people who want to short sell, it's probably a good opportunity, because I don't care if they had a good quarter. They're going to lose a lot of money. Anybody who's loaned money to Americans is going to lose a lot of money, because the Americans are too broke to pay the money back. That's just a fact.
So could a client of yours say, Peter, I want you to employ some of these shorting routines and, you know, pick out some stocks that you think are going down?
Yeah, I mean, you can do that. We don't encourage short selling because it's more of a speculation, but we can short stocks for you if that's what you want us to do on it. You know, I mean, if you say, look, I want to short some stocks, and the stocks that I would short are the ones that are specifically focused at America's economy domestically, at the American consumer, which would be financials, which would be retailers, home builders. But the ideal time to short these stocks is after a rally. And, you know, whether this is going to be a one-day wonder or whether this rally is going to last for a few days or a few weeks or a few months, you don't know. You don't know yet. But I would think, looking at a chart of Wells Fargo, right, I think that if you look at the previous lows, they were right around this 27, there should be a lot of resistance here. If it can break through here, if the stock can get anywhere above 30, my guess is that it's a great short, you know, and I don't think Wells Fargo's, I think Bank of America is probably even a better short. And, you know, and Bank of America, you know, they had a similar rally today. They were up like 20% or so, but their chart looks a lot worse. And, of course, remember, Bank of America bought Countrywide, and that's a mountain of liability.
Meredith Whitney was saying today that Wells Fargo has a huge exposure to the California real estate market.
Oh, they have a massive exposure to the California real estate market, and the more exposed you are to that market, the more money you're likely to lose. Anyway, thanks a lot for the call. Let me move on because I got my calls backing up here. Actually, I missed my opportunity for a commercial. Let's take a quick break. We'll play a commercial. We'll be right back.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back, and let's go back to the phones. Ed from Massachusetts.
Whoa.
There. All right, no Ed. What about Jim from California?
Hey, Peter, this is Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Quick comment and a couple of questions. So, you know, I was watching CNBC the other day, Kudlow in particular, and he had a guy on the panel who actually was parroting some of your sentiments, and he actually said anyone that's short gold or long the dollar is going to get run over. So So I thought that was kind of interesting that those views are now starting to percolate on places like Kudlow, regardless.
Well, there are a few people that come on that show that express that sentiment. But, yeah, I mean, they're in the minority, but they're there.
Yeah, well, anyway, I wanted to ask you about the oil trust. I've invested in Penn Growth Energy and Penn West, and I've watched oil, you know, rally like crazy, you know, run up 40%. And these things have not nearly kept pace. They've maybe gone
up.
Yeah,
you know, some of them have and some of them haven't. I look across the board at the stocks that I own, that we own for clients, and there are some of my biggest positions that are hitting 52-week highs and have tripled, you know, in the last year or so. But there are many others that are close to 52-week lows. And, you know, I think that, you know, I think that there's some real bargains there. I personally added to two of my energy trust positions in my own account today.
Okay.
I added, you know, I like to add to the ones that are lagging or that are down. That's just kind of how I like to do it. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of bargains out there in a lot of these trusts, and we're continuing to buy them, you know. And a lot of it has to do with a lot of the uncertainty that's out there regarding the changes in the tax structure. But you know what? You know, I think there's value in these trusts. I don't really, you know, regardless of what's going to happen to the taxes. And they pay a lot of dividends. I mean, so one of the things to remember is if the stocks are still where they were a year ago, it doesn't mean you didn't have a good return, because the chances are you got a 15 or 20% return in your dividends.
I got a $500 dividend check this morning. And
yeah, so there's a lot of dividends there. So the fact that the stocks are not going down means that they're paying the dividends and you're not losing any principal.
Mm-hmm.
But I still agree that I think a lot of these stocks should have gone up more than they in fact did.
Okay. What about going into like an ETF like the USO to complement positions in oil trust? You think that's a good idea?
No, there's some. I'm not that particular ETF. I mean, we there's some ETFs that are good. I mean, there's a lot of them out there.
Okay.
You know, and there's a lot of ETFs that let you short things too. So.
Okay. One last question then. You know, I've got a significant position in physical gold and physical silver. And frankly, watching all this, I mean, I'm out here in California and watching all this pandemonium with IndyMac and, you know, bank runs, I'm starting to worry about my safe deposit box. I mean, would I be better off putting that in? And
deposit box is not in jeopardy in a bank run. What's in jeopardy in a bank run is the deposits. The safety deposit boxes are totally separate. It's your property. If there's a run on the bank, there's never a run on the safety deposit boxes. The only thing you have to worry about in a safety deposit box is what if the government, let's say, makes gold ownership illegal.
Right.
If they do that, they're not going to let you get to your safety deposit box until they check the contents. And if there's any gold there, they're going to take it and they're going to put you in handcuffs if you haven't turned it in.
And
that's one of the reasons that we recommend that, you know, you don't keep your gold in bank safety deposit boxes. You keep your gold, you know, on your property somewhere, but you don't keep a lot of it. You keep just some, but that you keep the majority of your gold out of the country where it's not at risk of U.S. government confiscation, which is why we like the Perth Mint. You know, because when you buy gold and silver through the Perth Mint, the gold and silver is in Australia.
Okay.
And it's in a government-owned mint. It's safe. No one's going to take it. Now, the Australian government can seize it, but Australia is a major gold producer. They don't have a history of seizing gold. They're not on the verge of a major economic collapse, which would precipitate the government's taking an unprecedented, unlawful action. The problem is America has a precedent for seizing gold, and we are on the cusp of a major collapse where the government might do such a thing.
Well, and Peter, that's exactly where I'm going. My thought is that if we end up hyperinflating, they may just start, you know, seizing gold and seizing silver. So
because their government, they're going to need it to pay the soldiers.
Right.
They're going to need it to keep the population in line. Look, this government has already shown that individual liberty and the Constitution mean nothing. And, you know, if they mean nothing during relative prosperity and peace, imagine what they do to the Constitution when, you know, the people are rioting in the streets and there's looting. And these guys come in with martial law.
Yeah. Well, you know, Peter, I just want to say this and I'll let you go. I'm one of those folks that has been sitting on the fence and just sort of managing my own money. And frankly, watching what happened with IndyMac over the last few days has really woken me up in a way that I think I wasn't before. So I'm definitely going to be opening up an account with you
So. Yeah, we'll try to get, I mean, I think right now it's very, and a lot of people say, well, how can you say this? You know, it's fortunate. A lot of our stocks are going down, and some of them have gone down a lot in the last few months, more than I would have expected. But I think it's a good thing. I mean, people say, well, how can you say it's a good thing that these stocks are going down? Because we're still buying them. I'm still getting people's money out of the country, and I think it's fortunate that as low as the dollar is right now, the dollar's hitting record lows, that at least we can take advantage of some bargains in these foreign stocks. Because what's happening is the foreign stock buyers are very nervous about America's problems spilling out around the world, even though the evidence that that's happening is marginal at best, because the global economies are still doing well. But everybody's afraid that we're going to catch this giant pneumonia because the U.S. has a cold. When they figure out that these fears are unwarranted, these stocks should come roaring back. But in the meantime, the fact that they're down on these irrational fears is a great thing. And if you already own these stocks and they're down, it's no big deal because we're not selling them. So it's good because you get a chance to buy more with your dividends or with new money. New clients have a chance to buy more. And ultimately, you know, as long as the stocks recover, the path that they took to get there doesn't matter because we weren't selling the stocks anyway. Like, I've got one of my stocks. I own this stock called Randgold Exploration.
Uh-huh.
And it's a South African stock, and it was suspended from trading. And it hasn't traded in about at least 4 or 5 months or 6 months. There's all these legal arguments. And I forget how much money I got in this thing, $100,000, $50,000, $100,000. I don't know. I own a lot of gold stocks. I probably own at least 50, 70 different gold stocks. This is one of them. So it doesn't trade, right? There's all these legal, they suspended the stock. It's in South Africa. There's all kinds of, and I bought the stock when it was way down, too, because of all the problems. I took a shot because there was all this controversy and the thing was way down. But it's not even trading right now. It's been suspended in South Africa. It used to trade on the pink sheets. It's suspended there, right? So I can't even sell it if I wanted to. So the stock is effectively worthless now in my account. But the reality is it doesn't even matter to me because even if it was trading, I wasn't going to sell it. And eventually they settle out these legal problems they have with this other company. Eventually the stock might get relisted. And eventually, but in the meantime, to me, when I think about it, it doesn't matter because I wasn't going to sell it anyway. The fact that I can't sell it doesn't even matter to me. And so this stock is effectively worth zero right now. So other stocks that have gone down 20 or 30%, this stock that I own has gone down 100% because if I wanted to sell it, I would get $0.
Right.
But ultimately, as long as the trading is resumed at some future date, then it doesn't matter to me that for a while, if I tried to sell it, I couldn't get any money because I wasn't going to sell it anyway.
The underlying asset is still worth something. And
well, that's what the question is, because there's a lot of legal questions. But I bought the stock under a cloud of uncertainty, thinking that, you know, I could make a lot of money in the stock. And so, I mean, it's not a stock that I was, you know, recommending to a lot of clients. It's very speculative. But my point in bringing it up is that even though it's technically worthless because I can't sell it, ultimately, I wouldn't sell it anyway. So if you own a stock that's gone down that you weren't going to sell anyway, just because it's gone down and somebody can buy it cheaper than you did, doesn't mean that this is some real loss. Most of these stocks that we own that are not down because of real problems with the companies. They're down because of problems in the market, because of irrational fears, because of liquidity, because of forced selling, for a lot of other reasons that have created this temporary, I believe, drop in a lot of prices. And if anything, it creates a huge opportunity for new clients and existing clients to be able to get better entry points and lock up better dividend yields than had this not happened. You know, I remember, I forget these stocks. I had a business partner up until 2000, and he bought all these REITs one day. I didn't even know about it until like weeks or months later, you know, 4 or 5 REITs in the U.S. And he bought them. By the time I noticed he bought them, they were already like 2 or 3 times what he paid. And I said, what the hell? How'd you do this? How'd you buy all these stocks so cheap? He said, well, there was a problem one day. A firm that owned big positions of these stocks was indicted. There was some criminal doing. And the stocks got killed because these were their big positions. And I stepped up and bought them. And obviously, there was a lot of panic selling on a day or two when there were some indictments of people that owned these shares. But the bottom line is, there was nothing wrong with the shares. There was just a big problem with a major shareholder that caused a bunch of stock to get liquidated. And the people that sold, well, you know, they got screwed. But this guy that worked with me, he was smart enough to take advantage of these cheap prices, and he made a lot of money, you know.
Well, I love the idea of going in when something's been beaten up, and you know, I own a lot of gold stocks myself and a lot of oil stocks, but I feel like I'm totally concentrated in Canada.
Yeah, you know, I own a lot of them too, and I can tell you that, you know, I had some stocks that hit 52-week highs this week, some of my bigger Canadian positions, but I also had a few juniors that hit 52-week lows, even though gold was getting close to $1,000 an ounce again.
Yeah, you're walking over my grave. I've watched Gold Corp skyrocket, and I've watched things like Silver Corp and Mindfinders get killed. And
because you know what? The only stocks that are going up are the real huge big-cap Canadians that the big money goes to. But a lot of the smaller stocks are getting killed. They're still having trouble raising money. They're still having trouble making a profit. You know, this is still early on. There is not a bunch of wild speculation going on in the gold market when all the speculative stocks are on the lows.
Yeah. Although Peter, I got to tell you, listening to these guys start to talk about gold on CNBC, I got a feeling that it's just a matter of time with gold before. I mean, if it breaks 1,000 and starts running up from there, I think there's going to be a lot of momentum money that comes into the market. So, anyway.
Look, this is, I've said before, this is a base. Remember, the high in gold was 850 back in 1980. And all this base that we're building now is with 850 as the support. People don't understand the meaning where the old resistance becomes the new support. We are getting ready for a huge move up in gold that's going to last for years.
Wow, that's good news. Well,
thanks for the call.
Thanks, Peter.
Okay, let me take the second commercial, and we'll be right back for the rest of the show.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. The next caller is, I believe, Roger from Illinois.
Hi, Peter. I'm a Euro Pacific client, and after watching Paulson in front of the Senate committee the other day, I'm very happy to have most of my money out of the country.
He doesn't inspire a lot of confidence, does he?
No, in fact, what he was asking for, I could hardly believe it. It was so ridiculous, I wasn't sure whether I was watching Henry Paulson or Pat Paulson there in front of Congress. But I was trying to figure out why he would take that tack, and I think that the best thing I can think of is that if he asked for a specific number, he would be admitting how big the problem was. He would have to.
Yeah, and he also doesn't want to, you know, if he says, well, I need $200 million, I need $500 billion, oh, my God, you need all that money? So he just wants an unspecified but unlimited amount of money, which they would be, I mean, that's basically like George Bush going there and saying, look, you know, just use it. You know, I don't know. I want unlimited spending authority and, you know, to do whatever I want. I mean, this is crazy. Congress is supposed to be in charge of appropriations. They're not supposed to unilaterally surrender that authority, that purse string, to the executive branch.
Yeah, and I was trying to think, has there ever been anybody in history in any country who's gone to the leaders of their country and said, give me a blank check? Let me.
Insanity. And you know the crazy thing about it is, he'll probably get it.
Yeah, it is.
Basically, they're committing, what if it ends up being $2 trillion?
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, I just wanted, I was just astounded by his request, how ludicrous it is, and just wanted to make a comment somewhere. So keep doing the good work.
Look, when you hear something like that, you got to say, I got to get out of my dollar ASAP. Because they're basically saying, we're going to fund unlimited amount of Fannie and Freddie losses. And, of course, the minute they do that, it's like, okay, you guys can make as many bad loans as you want. Because the federal government's just going to fill up the kitty as fast as you empty it out.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, well, thanks for the call.
Okay, have a good night.
Next call is, I believe, is it
Peter from Michigan?
Yes.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
Very good. Thanks for taking my call. Just finished reading your book. I've been following you for years, and one of the things I'm kind of concerned about, and I'd love to have you comment on, is the chances of the Chinese removing their peg or their loose peg to the dollar after the Olympics, what that will do to their treasury holdings, and whether that might be the pin that causes a run on the dollar because of their, you know, high.
Well, first of all, before I answer, let me say, let's take no more calls. I've got two more people waiting on hold, which I will get to, but I would say, given how much time is left, we probably don't have time for any additional calls, so let's hold off on the two extra callers that we have. Well, I think the probability that the Chinese are going to drop the peg at some point after the Olympics is 100%. I don't know how soon after, but you know they are going to do it. And the problem is maintaining the peg is more expensive and more problematic than suffering whatever disruptions would result from watching the dollar go down the tubes, which of course would destroy the value of their dollar reserves. The Chinese now have over $1.8 trillion in dollar reserves. When you count Hong Kong, which is part of China, they've got $2 trillion in reserves. Now, it was not even a year ago that they hit $1 trillion. Now they've got a $2 trillion problem. If they maintain the dollar peg, in another year or two, they'll have a $4 trillion problem, then a then a $10 trillion problem. So the longer they wait to bite the bullet, the bigger the problem is going to be, and the harder that bullet's going to be to bite. So they've got to abandon the peg. They've got to, face up to the fact that they've thrown a lot of good money after bad and move on. And, of course, that's the best thing that they can do, because the minute they stop throwing good money after bad, the minute they can do something better with that good money. And there's a lot of better things they can do than sending it to us to blow it. So I think it's going to happen, and it's America that has to worry, not the Chinese. Yeah, the Chinese are going to take a hit, but we're going to take a much, much bigger hit. And ultimately, the Chinese will benefit from the fact that they no longer have to subsidize us, and they can reclaim for themselves the fruits of their labor and the savings that they generate.
Very good. Thank you. And my other question is, an account with you, if it's in foreign stocks, if the money to buy those stocks has been converted from dollars, being a U.S. brokerage, I don't quite understand how you're insulated from dollar-denominated assets if you're actually...
Well, we're not investing. We're not investing in those assets. So if we have a portfolio of foreign stocks, and all else being equal, the dollar loses half its value, then you'll have twice as many dollars in your brokerage account. So if you have a $100,000 account, which we convert into a portfolio of maybe 10 or 15 foreign stocks, if the dollar loses half its value, then your brokerage statement will read $200,000, assuming that the stocks themselves have not gone up or down. Now, of course, the best possible scenario for the Euro-Pacific Capital portfolio is that the U.S. dollar goes down and the foreign stocks also go up in terms of their local currency. That's when you see the biggest dollar appreciation in the account. What's been happening recently is that most of the stocks that we own have been going down in their local currencies. Now, the dollar has been going down. So let's say a stock that we own is down 20%, but the currency is up 5%. Then our clients see a 15% decline because they made 5% in the stock, in the currency, but they lost 20% in the stock. But okay, if we get the stock up 20% and the currency up 20%, then all of a sudden you're looking at near 40%. So, and ultimately, that's what I think is going to happen. I think a lot of the near-term declines is going to end up being noise in these bull trends, And ultimately, we're going to see the dollar moving down and these foreign stocks moving up, particularly once the world realizes that their prosperity does not depend on our consumption. And if anything, our consumption is actually impairing their prosperity. That's the big thing.
That is the big thing. How soon are you? Do you think that the world will realize that that is the case and they're going to abandon the dollar?
I don't know. You know, there's no way to know when this is going to happen. You know, but look, you know, I was saying the same thing. You know, for a while people were buying internet stocks that lost money. And I said, well, this is stupid. How long can people buy stocks that have no prospects of ever making money? Well, it worked for a few years and then it stopped. And for a while, people were in the business of loaning people money to buy houses that the people couldn't possibly pay back. Well, I knew that was stupid the minute I saw it. I mean, why would you loan money to somebody that can't pay it back? Well, people did it. Well, you know, it ended. Well, now you've got all these central banks and everybody buying all these dollars. They're selling products to Americans that we can't afford to pay for. Are they going to do that forever? Absolutely not. It's going to end, just like the dot-coms and the subprime. I just don't know exactly when it's going to end. I just know that you don't want to own the dollar when it does end, just like you didn't want to be in subprime mortgages when the music stopped there, or you didn't want to be in dot-coms when the music stopped there, because the losses were huge. And so I know that my clients buying these stocks, regardless of what they're worth today based on this market noise, are out of the dollar, and when the music stops, their wealth is going to be preserved.
Yep, I agree. Finally, I've been...
The call. I want to hop because I got
to acknowledge this.
Eight more minutes. Let me take Steve from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Peter. I'd like to basically do some detailed questioning related to where Mary was headed. She was your first caller from California.
Mm-hmm.
On the verge of opening an account with Euro Pacific Capital, but I want to understand how I can convert my U.S. dollars that are in my checking and savings accounts and also money market fund accounts into a foreign currency. And I guess that would be my first question is...
We do that for you when the money comes in. Now, generally, we convert your dollars into foreign currencies so that you can buy foreign stocks.
Okay.
Is that what you want to do, or do you just want to buy foreign currencies and hold on to the currencies themselves without actually investing them in anything?
Right. Well, let me put it this way. Before I get too heavily involved with Euro Pacific, I just want to understand some fundamental transactions, which are, basically, what's the minimum amount?
Well, there's no real minimum. But what I would say is if you have these type of questions,
uh-huh,
rather than discuss them on the air because they're kind of boring, why don't you call up and actually speak with one of my brokers?
Okay.
And who can take the time, you know, on the phone to discuss all the boring details about how to get an account set up.
Okay. Well, maybe you can just answer one question then, and that has to do with transaction costs. In other words, every time I transfer dollars to a foreign bank account,
No, we're not transferring dollars around the foreign bank accounts, and we don't even charge you for the foreign exchange executions.
Okay.
You're buying a foreign stock or bond. But as I said, are you working with any of the brokers right now?
No, none of your brokers. Like I said, this was my last question to understand whether I should open an account with you because...
It's in Pennsylvania.
I
mean, why don't you call somebody in the New York or the Connecticut office?
Okay.
They will take the time to discuss all this stuff with you in detail.
Okay.
Everything is going to cost and how the mechanics work. And you can get all that information before you open up an account. But it's just not great to have the discussion on the air because there's more entertaining topics we can talk about.
Gotcha. And I guess maybe I'm just going to ask one more question. If I were to do this, what currency would you put the most amount of money into? Would it be Swiss?
You know, we're pretty diversified. I mean, we like a lot of the Asian currencies, the European currencies. The currencies that we're mainly buying, I'd say, are Canadian, New Zealand, Australian, Norway, Sweden, Euro, Switzerland, and the Singapore dollar, the Hong Kong dollar, and the RMB, I mean the Japanese yen, and we're buying a lot of these.
You are very well diversified then.
So we're trying to do. We're trying to be diversified and just be diversified out of the U.S. dollar.
Sure, absolutely.
We're buying some of the high-yielding currencies. We're buying some of the low-yielding currencies. Just
okay.
Getting out of the... Anyway, thanks for the call. Let me take the last caller of the evening. It is Walt from New York.
Hey, hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. Actually, I moved from California. I sold my bubble house to a sucker and moved in Buxton farmland in upstate New York to ride out what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I have talked about the questions about the Canadian Energy Trust also. I'm wondering why the dividend hasn't gone up, since they're supposed to, the profit from them is supposed to be the dividend to the shareholders. How come that hasn't gone up with all this?
Have raised their dividends? Yeah, I mean, we have, there are some of the Canadian trusts that we own that have increased their dividends, but there are others that have actually cut their dividends. And so, you know, a lot of it has to do with the rising costs that they have. But in some cases, you know, they simply haven't passed it on. Some of these companies were paying distribution rates that were very high as a percentage of their earnings. And so now as they're earning money, the dividends are more sustainable because they're smaller percentages. But over time, I do expect the dividends to rise. And of course, the dividends were in Canadian dollars. So by definition, as the Canadian dollar has been rising over the years, even if the Canadian dividend held steady, the U.S. dollar dividend has, in fact, been rising.
How can I actually research, you know, their, do they have a report that tells where they spend their money?
Excuse me?
You know, do the companies have a report, you know, that
you can get their annual reports, you can go to their websites, and you can, you know, see, you know, what the dividend payout ratios are and what they're earning and all that.
Okay. Well, I guess that was it for now. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Anyway, we're just running into the last bit of time. I'm watching some of these foreign stocks opening. You know, they're not much of a bounce. In fact, some of the stocks that we have in Australia that have been weak continue to be weak. A couple of them continue to make new fresh 52-week lows. You know, it's just kind of incredible. One I'm looking at here is a mining company, Industrial Miner, that's now yielding about 20%. This particular stock has dropped from a high of $10 a share last year to $2 a share. So you're talking about an 80% decline in the price of the stock. Now, the stock went up from $1.80 to $10 in 2 years, but in, you know, it's now lost the entire gain, even though the value of the metal that they're mining is still right near the highs. So, you know, the stocks are acting as if the bull market has not only ended in natural in metals, but that it never even began in the first place, that the stocks are now trading at the same price that they were trading at before the bull market started. It is absolute insanity, and it's an opportunity, really, to turn back the clock and buy out on some of these stocks that you totally missed out on, because even though the commodity prices themselves are within a few percent of their all-time record highs, the stocks are near their lowest prices they've ever traded. It's unbelievable, but it shows you the type of market that we're in right now, and the type of opportunities that actually exist. I mean, a lot of people look at this and say, oh, no, look, my stock is down. They think they're upset. I look at it the opposite way, and I've seen this happen in the past. This is really, really an opportunity to get some incredible buys that, you know, 6 months, a year ago, you would have thought you'd have never seen these opportunities again, and yet here they are. So people have to learn to accept this for what it is and not be scared, because it's the fear that's causing the prices to drop. And reason that we have is what's going to let us make a lot of money. Anyway, thanks a lot for the call. Remember again to call 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. Don't forget to tune in to Fox Bulls and Bears Saturday and CBS Sunday morning this Sunday. Thanks again. I'll be back again next week for Wall Street Unspun, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific.